weeknights from 6
on 2FM. Thanks to the two Johnnies and Afric, it's Wednesday, April 10th, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Alan Cawley joins us to talk Ireland versus England, the Champions League, and the ongoing search for a men's international manager. Martin Loughran of Crumlin United is in to talk to us about the Robbie Keane tournament and the ongoing facilities issue in Irish football. We'll speak to Michelle Ryan and Ali Cahill about the ladies' football finals, and Greg Allen sets us up for the Masters. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On. On 2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. Before we get into what we're going to get through today, we have a competition for you. So this week we have a great Aer Lingus competition as the official airline partner of the Irish rugby team. Aer Lingus brings home advantage to every Ireland game, no matter where we're playing. And thanks to Aer Lingus, you could win a fantastic trip to London to support the Ireland women's rugby team against England in the Guinness Women's Six Nations. That's our overall prize to be won on Friday. But thanks to Aer Lingus, we've also got a signed Irish rugby jersey, a few of them to give away. For the chance to win a signed jersey and get into Friday's draw, just answer the following question. True or false, Germany compete in the Women's Six Nations? Text your answer, name and email address to 51552, and then later on we're going to pick one person randomly and their name will go into the draw on Friday. And just one important thing on our big prize, you've got to be able to travel on Friday the 19th of April, so don't enter if you can't get the day off. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2FM for all the details. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we have two very special guests. Alan Cawley has graced me with his presence. How are you, Alan?
I'm great, Marie, yeah.
And Martin Loughran of Crumlin United is in to talk to us as well. How are you, Marie, Martin?
How are you doing? Thanks for having us.
No, thanks very much for coming in. I think the day that's in it, it's a very wet, rainy day. It has been pretty bad for the last while, so we're going to be getting into the struggles that football clubs have with facilities. It's a problem all over the country and one that has come into such sharp focus over the last 6 months or so, because the weather has been particularly bad and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon. And this is not just a problem for football in Ireland, it's a problem for all sports, because pretty much all the sports that we play are outdoors and we don't have a huge amount of facilities and there hasn't been a lot of development. So we'll be talking to Martin about that in a while, and also the Robbie Keane tournament that is coming up in just a few weeks. Martin and Crumlin are bringing over some of the top schoolboy teams in the world and they will be playing some of our teams in Ireland, so we're going to get into that as well. But first of all, Alan Cawley, I want to talk about the Ireland women's game. They lost to England last night, 2-0. We know that they're in the group of death and that they have come up from being in a group where they had a lot of easy games. Last night was going to be a huge test for them. Just your thoughts on it overall?
I suppose, as you said, Marie, we're looking at it from the point of view that they have stepped up to the elite level, if you like. Obviously, we've come from the Nations B, and this is where we want to be. This is where the girls want to be. They want that development, they want that progression, but we're still a good bit away from these top teams. And I think the only way we're going to get closer to those top teams is obviously going up against them on a regular basis, which is what we're getting at the moment. So for anybody who felt that we'll play France and we'll play England and we'll be that we'll be getting results against them, I think that was a bit far-fetched. But I think over the, if you look back on the two performances, despite the fact that they were totally dominated and outplayed over in France, and again largely to a large extent last night in the game, I still think there's a lot of positives in terms of going forward and the development of the team and where they need to get to, and some of the things they can take from those two performances to get them closer to those two teams, because France and England, you won't get much better than them, to be fair. And it's a good gauge of where we're at. I felt after the World Cup that people got a little bit carried away in terms of the national team and where we're at, because to be fair to Vera, if you think back to those games, and we obviously covered them all, Marie, and we've been covering them for the last 3-4 years, so we've seen the development of this team over a long period of time. I did feel people got carried away, and I'm not just saying people outside in terms of fans, I think the girls themselves and the group themselves, just in terms of how difficult it is to try and close that gap to the elite teams. They were very, very competitive in the games in the World Cup, but that was largely down to the defensive setup. And then the criticism came that they were too defensive, but you don't go from just a defensive setup to all of a sudden turning into Barcelona overnight. That's going to take time and effort, and also it's going to take very, very good players. So if you look at the group that obviously Eileen has taken over now, inherited largely the same squad, brought in one or two obviously, it's going to take a lot of time for us to get to that. Now, I don't think a lot of time in terms of 5-10 years. I think we'll get there fairly quickly, but the only way we'll get there, as I say, is putting in performances and going against the teams like we played last night on a regular basis, because that's the only way we're going to get better. Those Nations League games we played, and obviously we had to play them against the likes of Hungary, Northern Ireland, Albania. Again, people getting carried away off the back of those results, because obviously we outplayed them. The only reason we outplayed them, Marie, is because we're better than them and they're lesser teams. We're in that position now going against England and France. And I still think in that second half last night, when they pushed on and they had a go and played largely to our strengths and long throws and getting things into the box, I thought there was plenty of positives to take from that second half performance.
Martin, did you get to see it?
I say in the first half, I think like for us to be competing against them nations is really, really good. I mean, women's football has come on probably far quicker than the men's football has come, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Katie McCabe obviously has come from Tala, played for Crumlin, has played through the structures here in Ireland, a lot of them play in England. And I think at any level of the football here, you need to be playing at these academies in England to get to where you want to go. We don't have the infrastructure here to get the girls or the boys to the levels that they need to be.
I think that's the nub of it. It's not a girls' problem, it's a football problem. Yeah, so while we have the numbers in both girls and boys, and we see the kids, and Martin, you'll see them coming through your gates week after week, it's trying to get them enough hours, trying to get them enough touches on the ball so that they can be as technically competent as the players that are playing across the water and are almost full-time footballers from kids.
Yeah, but I think for the women's section, like, to be competing against the likes of England, who are, what, top two in the world, are they?
Yeah, second.
They weren't that far behind them last night, you know what I mean? Like, you look at Ireland over the years against any of the top teams, they're always defending, attack, defend, attack. But last night, I thought they'd done really well. I think it's a credit to the level they got to.
Yeah.
Are they ahead of themselves a little bit? Maybe, but they've come from here to here so quick.
That's where they want to be.
Can they go further?
They want to be competitive.
And they were competitive.
Stage,
that's the beauty of it. That's what I'm saying, Marie, about in terms of, I suppose, going forward. And I always felt off the back of the World Cup, the next, I suppose, the evolution of that team was, we've seen that they can defend deep and they can defend in numbers and defend resolutely. And Irish people, women, men, whatever, we've all been good at that over the years.
Yeah.
But the next progression for that team, as I said, under Vera, we always felt was the next stage of us in possession and getting us further up the pitch and trying to create chances and score goals, which is the hardest thing in football to do, and men and women.
And it's amazing because we could be having this exact same conversation about the men's team, about being more composed in possession, trying to be calm on the ball, trying to pick out that pass. And that just takes having a player of a certain standard.
Yeah, and it takes time as well in terms of obviously training and repetition and all the things that we hear over the years, Marie. And to be fair, that's why I think there's a lot of positives to take from them, because it's so early, it's in its infancy, women's football in this country, that the progress that they've made at such a rapid rise, that's maybe why people tended to get carried away. But now it's almost as if we've had the World Cup, we've seen where we're at, we know where the big nations are at, we've played them in the last couple of games. It was almost like a little bit of a reality check, and here we are, and now we know where we need to get to and let the work begin to get to that level, if you like. But I think, as I said, over those two games, now they were totally outplayed against France, I felt. Last night, as I said, the second half was a lot better. England were the better team in the first half last night. I thought the third penalty was very, very harsh. Never a penalty. I felt the one before that was. But England are playing at, you go through all the players, like you've been over to the WSL games, you've been to the Champions League games, Marie. These are players playing with Barcelona, Chelsea, Arsenal, all the best teams
going
in the world.
Going for big money, like they're top level players. And
they didn't get there overnight as well. They've been obviously training at elite levels as full-time footballers for such a period of time. So because the game is so early in its infancy here, as I said, there's lots to be positive about, but just go about your business quietly.
I'd love to actually find out if Lauren James trained as much as Rhys James when she was growing up. Like, were they exposed to the same, brother and sister, were they exposed to the same amount of hours that they were putting in their respective academies? Because if she had, you know, even I'd say a third of what Rhys James was exposed to, just in terms of development, it makes sense as to why she is the player that she is and why she is so composed on the ball and able to take her opportunities. Martin, does it come back to facilities? Because, like, that seems to be something that Alan and I talk about a huge amount, that we have all these kids, the weather is so bad that there isn't anywhere for them to play. Like, you've got a big club there in Crumlin, you've kids coming through all the time, I know you're redoing the Astro at the moment, but is that enough, what you have?
No, it's not enough, no. I think, like, obviously Alan's been over in England, I've been over in England the last few weeks with different teams and tournaments and stuff. Like, I don't like saying it, but we're miles behind in relation to facilities. Absolutely miles, you know what I mean? Like, we even Astro, we're lucky. It's out of action at the moment, we're getting relayed. And we see how much we miss it, because we're finding it hard enough to get teams training. We try and give our kids as many contact hours as we can, but not near what they need. Now, look, there's kids that just want to play football, and there's kids that want to be footballers. Kids that just want to play football will get the normal hours. But kids that want to be footballers, you have to have the structures in place to get them there. Like, schoolboy clubs are not going to have it. They have a national league, but should have it, and it doesn't have it.
It's a good way of phrasing it, isn't it, Ray?
Yeah, really good.
I haven't actually heard that before. I'm going to mind that one, Martin, and keep it. Kids who want to play football and kids who want to be footballers. And that's what it boils down to. And even in terms of, Martin, I suppose, with the women's stuff, and we'll go back to the facilities, but just on that women's stuff, and you're in a better place than any of us, because you've seen, obviously, all over the years, the amount of time you've spent with Crumlin. But where do you feel the change has taken place, even in terms of the drive now for to have a women's team at academy level or schoolboy level or schoolgirl level?
Well, everyone is striving to have girls' teams, you know what I mean? But some clubs, you just don't have the facilities, you know what I mean? Like, we've 30 teams. We don't have any girls' teams. We have a couple of girls playing. Can we get a girls' team? We'd love to get a girls' team, but
where are they going to play?
Where are we going to play?
Should you let the girls play with the boys?
Yeah, we have probably 6-8 girls in the younger age groups that play, and some quite good. Now, my opinion would be that the really, you know, the better girls should play with boys. Brings them on quicker, they challenge more, and then they move on to the relevant age groups that girls when they have to, you know what I mean? But like, it's hard. Like, there's a lot of teams around us have girls' teams, but yet the FAO insists to get club mark, you have to have a girls' team. I'm not saying we shouldn't have them, but it's just, where do we put them? Like, it's that's the problem, you know what I mean? Yeah, we don't have enough space.
Ideally, it would be great to have your club to be able to cater for girls, so that if the brothers are going, the sisters are going, you're encouraging equally. It's not a drain on the parents having to go to two different clubs, but it is understandable that where do you play? Because ultimately, if you want the girls, you'll have to sacrifice the boys' team. So, or else get another Astro.
Yes.
And in terms of the facilities problem you have, Martin, like, if you're looking for grants or any help in enabling you to get better facilities or pitches, are you looking for a government help there, or is it fundraising on behalf of the club?
We're obviously replacing our Astro at the moment. Hadn't planned to replace it the next year, but you have to get the Astro's test every so often. It was pre-tested there a few months ago, and there was problems with the base underneath, which would cost around 40 or 50 grand to fix. You got to take it up, so we said, right, we'll go for broke and try and replace it. Blake brothers John and Sean and Kevin Blake came in and gave us a fair bit of sponsorship for it, so we said, right, we'll drive on here. All the parents and the players rode in. You might have seen us in shopping centres all over Crumlin and Clondalkin with buckets, so we're getting it replaced. But without that, we would be nowhere near where we are now, you know what I mean? Nowhere near.
So, in terms of the governing bodies, there's nothing coming from that.
Well, we could go. You can't apply for sports capital grants. It just had passed us at this stage. We would have to wait till next year. And we weren't willing to spend 40, 50 grand on a pitch that we were going to replace next year anyway. So, we said, look, we'll go for broke. And we did. We ended up getting some money off a local council, got us some money from the discretionary fund, Pat Dunn. So, we got something off them.
Do you see a time where you'll have a girls' section in Crumlin?
Oh, yeah. We're looking to get a girls' section, yeah. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, we'll have to, like. Because every day somebody's asked us, get a girls team. Now I think for girls teams you need girls coaching, maybe with men, but you definitely need girls involved. We have two girls in the club now coaching, so that's a start.
That's brilliant, yeah.
So that's, you know, we do plan to start an academy and work the way up, because we spoke to a couple of the clubs around that have Ten Year Rangers, have a huge girls section. Spoke to them, they started from academy level.
And then build it.
So that's where we're going to go.
Eventually get to have a senior
and that's
team.
The beauty of brilliant, last night as well, Marie. The off the pitch aspect in terms of the crowd and 32,000 and the amount of kids that were there and seeing an occasion like that as well, which is fantastic. And that's what needs to nearly become the norm, you know, to see that and then playing in the Aviva. And obviously we've covered all the games in Tala, which is a great home for them, but now they're expanding. And if you're getting England and France and all these nations coming in European qualifiers or whatever case may be, it will become the norm to have them in the Aviva.
So Martin, when you look at kids now coming through, and you know, you mentioned that there's the League of Ireland academies, is the acceptance now that that's the pathway if you want to be a footballer?
Well, that's the pathway that's there in front of us. You know, do I fully agree with it? Probably not. but it's there and you have to deal with the best you can, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Why don't you fully agree with it?
Well, say for instance, we had a 2010 team on a tour team, finished last May with us, I think 12 or 14, went National League to go on the tour team in June. The league didn't start till March, just gone. So they're playing no competitive football for June to March. Then they go into another 14 league, which is non-competitive, 3.5 hours. And then they come out with under 15, and then you have to go and start playing competitive football. Now, is it competitiveness? Is it development? I think you can do both. I think the huge part in Irish football is we're competitive. Like Alan, you played and it was hell for leather. It was competitive, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's how we produce the top players, Robbie Keane and Damien Duff and Niall Quinn and all them, from playing in the DDSL competitive every week, week in, week out. I find with some of the underage national teams, you look at some of the scores some weeks, like it's...
So for a little bit of context for people, Martin, listen, obviously the change over to the national leagues, you've been involved in Crumlin for
50 years this year.
Oh wow.
Unbelievable. So you've overseen it from the old fashioned way, I like to call it. What I went through was young lads play up until schoolboy level, 15, 16, and then the better ones go to England in a nutshell. Obviously it's changed now, as you said, because of Brexit.
Yeah, huge
and the academy structures that have been put in place here, that they're trying to put pathways in place for League of Ireland clubs, that they take over the development, if you like. But you don't agree with that?
I'm not saying I don't agree with it fully. I think there has to be, I don't like saying the word elite somewhere. It has to be, you know what I mean? I just think they need to do better.
Yeah.
And bringing the schoolboy clubs in.
So do you think the start at under 18 or under 13 is too early?
Definitely too young. 15s for me.
15s?
Mm. Yeah.
So you'd like to hold on to the young lads at Crumlin until they're 15 and let them go to St. Pat's or Bowes or wherever at 15?
Yeah, Rovers, wherever they go, yeah. Yeah, that's what I think. But everyone has their opinions, you know what I mean?
The change of the season? So I'm sure you're aware of the criticism of summer football and that it had been tried before and it didn't work out. In Mark Hannam's pathway, he plans to bring back, you don't call it summer football, it's called calendar football, and that the kids will be playing pretty much all year round. Do you think that it's a better way to go?
I'd be totally biased towards calendar year summer football. I think it's the right way to go, 100%. I've batted it for years now at this stage, and I think that is the way forward, definitely. I know we tried at schoolboy level, but as soon as the upheaval came to the FBI, it was sort of, we'll bend that and we go back to, and clubs are sort of forced back a little bit, but it happened. Now, you know, there is, I understand, holidays in the summer and kids away and kids going to Wexford for the summer and all that type of stuff, but I do think there has to be a calendar year. You have to play within the year from January to December. At the moment we're playing September to December, and then we're playing January to May. But it's just losing out on so much football. Now, some pre-season at the now at the moment, because the way the weather is, you wouldn't expect this type of weather in April. And there's pros and cons for it, but I think it needs to be played within the year. Play your 10-month season within the year.
I'm in total agreement. I've been the same for a long time, as Marie knows. It's the only way to go, really, Martin. And why it's taken this long, obviously there's other sports that would kick up a fuss maybe over that, but even in terms of the holiday thing, was never a runner for me in terms of an argument, because every week you might have a lad who's away on a holiday or going to a party or whatever the case may be. You can cater for one or two away. It's not like you have a squad of 14 who are going to be away for the summer, you know. So it should always, in terms of the contact hours, the weather, the facilities, all that stuff, you're asking kids to go out and play in the middle of November, December with our
and coaches
climate.
All
I was talking to one of the fella from another club on the north side there at one of the FAI meetings, and it came up about the calendar season, and he said to me, like, how are you going to train in January and February? He says, what are you doing at the moment? Are you closed down for January and February? We're doing it at the moment.
100%.
So Martin, tell us about the Robbie Keane Academy tournament that you have coming up.
Yeah, Robbie Keane Academy Cup started in 2018. It was a day we wanted to get going, and in fairness, the group of parents we had at that stage were a really good team. Actually, Archie Gray played for Leeds that year. He's now playing for Leeds Championship. So he would have played the first Academy Cup, and two of our own lads just got capped last week for the 19th in Ireland that played in it. So it's done really well for us. But so one of the parents took it on, and it's gone from strength to strength ever since. Like this year, we have Aston Villa, Burnley, Everton, Sunderland, Atletico Madrid, Seattle from America, Seattle Celtic, Shamrock Rovers, our partner club, and ourselves, Crumlin, between the 3rd and the 5th of May. Obviously, it's a huge undertaking for the club to get it off the ground. Sean Hall from Mangard Plus has come on board for the last 3 years. The parents buy in, like it costs the region of 40 grand to host it over the 3 days. I think Maria won even at one or two of them.
I was,
you know,
seeing
your other half down there. But last year was probably the best one. We've had the likes of Juventus, we've had Benfica, we've had Man City, we've had Liverpool. Some unbelievable clubs over. And for us as a club, it's got us on the map. And we get an invitation from other clubs to go over. Like we had a team over in Wolverhampton last week.
I saw that, they won it.
And they won it, do you know what I mean?
Ed's team.
I
saw that.
Yeah.
They're out of the age group we play against.
So well, that, it's great for the area as well. Like, you know what I mean? A lot of people buy into it. Just hope the pitch is finished in time.
It's a huge compliment to yourselves and the club as well, Martin, that you have clubs of that stature. Like, how do you think Irish schoolboy clubs are, obviously it's League of Ireland clubs now at an underage, but how do you think they're viewed across the water? Like, you mentioned Ed's team going away last week to Wolves and winning the tournament. You often hear stories, Shamrock Rovers going to tournaments, do very well, other teams as well. What do you think the perception of those kind of elite academy clubs are towards schoolboy football in this country?
Well, I think we've got the height respect from clubs and we're over there. Definitely never had a bad word. The results have been, some have been off the Richter scale, some have been quite close, like the tournament last week in Wolverhampton. I've been at a good few with Shamrock Rovers and my grandson, but like, what I see is that there's definitely some kids in them age groups that could go into academies in England. It's what we do with them from 12 up, I think, is the...
I found when I remember when I went over first, it's almost a perception thing that we have here that we almost kind of don't really believe we're good enough to be over there. And it's only when you actually go away. I remember the first time I ever went away as a young fella and my dad telling me I was going on trial, and I was almost looking at him thinking, like, what am I going over on trial for? And he says, you'll be every bit as good as them. And it was only until I actually went in and trained and realised, not only every bit as good as them, you're better than them. And but it's almost we kind of don't really believe that. And I don't know, does it come back to in terms of all the, like, we always seem to be looking at problems here in this country in terms of the game, rather than actually looking at the academy setup that Martin has, the good clubs around the country, the successful teams that go away, win tournaments, do things, young lads that go on to have great careers. Like, there's a lot of positives as well.
Oh, a lot, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's loads of big clubs and there's loads of small clubs with big teams.
Yeah.
There's loads of potential in kids. It's just how you get out of them. Obviously, Brexit has killed it a bit for us. I think for the, not just for schoolboy clubs, but for the country in general, because kids are not going to England, can't go to England until they're 18. And there's a good bit behind, like, I wouldn't say they're miles behind, but they're a good bit behind.
Do you think they still need to go away, Martin?
Well, unless we can provide what's provided in a professional academy in other countries, they do need to go away. And at this moment of time, I don't think.
And do you think we'll ever get to the stage that now that the responsibility is on us, Martin, that we have to cater for those young lads that are still here and give them what they were getting in England, say, when we went away?
Well, I think we will have to, otherwise we're going to be...
But can you see us getting to that point? The way things are now?
Not at the moment, unless there's huge infrastructure and finances put into to develop academies. Like, 20 years ago, I was over in France in Clairefontaine, and they take the best 20 or so kids in at 12, keep them till they're 16, provided they stay on the pathway, and then they put them out to the big clubs around. I mean, like, that's what we should be doing here.
And they do that for the girls as well. So.
I've always, you know, get the best 20 or 30 kids of an age group, get them in, school them.
England done that for years,
coach them, and you have teams, like, it's been proven.
Okay, well, before we say goodbye to football for today, Alan, there was two big Champions League games as well last night.
They were fairly big, all right.
No, I didn't get to see them because I was in the Aviva.
Okay, I saw you, don't worry. Yeah. You did very well. Well done.
But two
amazing
really good
games.
Football games, yeah.
Well, in my view, the four biggest kind of, the four best teams around at the moment around Europe, obviously Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool might say something like that as well, or something about that, because they're as good as Man City and Arsenal. But in terms of the European teams, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. The problem with the Champions League this year, I feel, is that they've all been drawn on the one side of the draw. So you have the four best teams on one side, and then you have the four who were playing tonight, who are still very good teams, but they're not at the level of the other four that we saw last night. But unbelievable match between Real Madrid and Man City. I actually thought Real Madrid were brilliant in the first half in terms of how they exposed Man City, because what they did was something real unusual that they probably would never have done. But they played Valverde on the right, they played Cruz and Camavinga in the middle, Rodrigo on the left, who normally can play on the right because they normally play a 4-3-3, but they played him on the left, and Vinicius and Bellingham almost as a front two, but they were allowed roam wherever they want, and they were all down the left hand side. So they exposed that kind of, a Akanji it was who was the Man City right full last night. every time on the counter-attack they got in, they had some unbelievable chances. The problem I felt for them was Pep tweaked that at half-time, but they just couldn't maintain the intensity they were playing at, and Man City took over the second half, totally dominated the ball. But in saying that, they still didn't put the game to bed. They went 3-2 up, but in fairness to Real Madrid, they got a goal out of nothing, a brilliant goal from Valverde, made it 3-3, sets it up lovely for the second leg, Marie. But looking at it last night, I felt Madrid probably needed to take a lead to Man City. I still think they might score at Man City, but I think Man City might score 2 or 3. That's the problem.
And Bayern and Arsenal?
Yeah, brilliant game as well, Bayern and Arsenal. And obviously Kane scoring the penalty. There was a bit of controversy near the end. Saka felt he should have had a penalty. Not so sure, but 2-2 overall. Again, a brilliant game. Now, I have a funny theory about this. I don't know what you think, Martin, or I don't know who you follow in England, but I've been mad about, obviously, the title race that we have at the moment. I think it's the best we've ever seen with the three teams. But I actually don't think it would be a bad thing if Arsenal go out of the Champions League. I think they're the favourites for the Premier League. They're obviously playing unbelievable stuff at the moment. I just think it'll be a distraction that they don't need.
Martin?
I think they'll go out of the Champions League anyway. I think Bayern will beat them.
Whether they like it or not.
I think that'll happen. I didn't see much of the games last night. It was out. But I'd be looking at Man City as the best one there.
Yeah, they're so strong, yeah.
They are. Okay, well, there's two games tonight as well. Atletico Dortmund and PSG Barcelona. Martin, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Very educational.
Thanks, Martin.
Learned a lot. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us. We've so much to come. We have the ladies' football finals from the weekend to talk about, Michelle Ryan and Ali Cal. Plus, we have the Masters with Greg. 2FM. Now, welcome back. We are turning our attention to ladies' football and the finals over the weekend. I'm delighted to say that Michelle Ryan is with us on the line. How are you, Michelle?
Good, Marie. Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. It was such an interesting weekend, I must say, on the ladies' football front. Let's start with the Division 1 final. I think there was a lot of momentum behind Armagh and everything that they've achieved this year, but there was a lot of people who thought that Kerry were going to be able to stand tall and get the better of them, but Armagh ended up winning 2-12 to 2-9, and it's kind of marked another year and another really good story in ladies football.
It did, exactly. And, you know, they were fully deserving of the win on the day, Marie. And I think, you know, interestingly enough, it is the third year in a row that a side has won the Division 1, having won Division 2 the previous year. Me did it, then Kerry did it, and now Armagh have done it. So I don't know, does that say a lot about, you know, wanting to keep that momentum and build it going and putting a good emphasis on the start of the year before a championship campaign? Or is it the fact that maybe me just opened a door that allowed teams to believe a little bit more in themselves after that years of dominance between Dublin and Cork, that, you know, that these things can be achieved, and people are, and teams are playing with a little bit more belief in themselves now? But look, I think Armagh were really full value for their win on the day. I know the sides went in level at half time, and I suppose I was a little worried for Armagh perspective, because they've been playing with a good wind. They built up a 3-point lead, and then Louisa Moore Hertig put 3 points over on the trot, and they went in level at half time. But I mean, a 15-minute spell in the second half just turned the game completely in Armagh's favour, and during that 15 minutes, who else but Amy Macken steps up and scores 1-6.
It's pretty phenomenal, isn't it? But look, you talk about Amy Macken, you add Kelly Mallon there as well. They just have players who are clinical and can rack up the scores on the scoreboard.
And that's the thing. And sorry, it was Armagh who scored 1-6. Amy Macken scored 1-4. But you're right, Kelly Mallon contributed to that. And to be fairness, her kicking from frees was excellent from Armagh. And they just can't, whatever Greg McGonigal said to them at halftime made a massive difference, I have to say, because to us watching on, it felt like the whole energy of the game just lifted massively. I suppose standards-wise, the first half, it was okay, it was a decent game, but it wouldn't have been a great contest. But just the fire that was in them in that second half, and they really were on a mission, and Kerry came out and got the first score, a goal from Nivni Krahuer, but then Kelly Mallon put over a point, and after that it was just Armagh in the driving seat, and they used the ball so well, they used the space so well, they went straight at the heart of Kerry. And, you know, for those of us who've been watching Kerry maybe the last year or two, it hasn't been easy to isolate defenders and to get in front of goal, and Armagh were doing that quite easily there for that period of time. And it is something Kerry are going to have to look at. And look, I said last week on the show that they're competitors and they go to want to win every game, and I've no doubt that they did want to win that game, absolutely, but they will have that perspective, and they've been voicing the perspective of there's no down the road is their aim, but there are some things they are going to have to look at, I suppose, defensively, in what I would have considered a very solid defence over the last 2 years was broken up a little bit easy by Armagh there in that second half.
So how deep do you think that they can go in this championship?
That's the question. That is the big, big question. I mean, look, sometimes we're in danger, I think, of when we remove ourselves from being players and you come to this side and you're analysing games, and there is a danger of overanalyzing the league. Now, we have to analyze it, obviously, of course, but there is a danger of putting maybe that too much emphasis. And there is a different mentality in players when they're going into a championship than when they're going into a league. There definitely is. Now, look, I have absolutely no doubt that Dublin are going to be a serious threat in this championship year. Absolutely no doubt. And they will have a lot to say about where the Brendan Martin goes come August. But I think, look, for Armagh, who were relegated back to Division 2, have come out of Division 2, have now mixed it with the best and performed against the best teams in the league and managed to attain a Division 1, it is very much about belief then, and not being shaken from you. They're going into an Ulster Championship now full of confidence. After that, you get the draws of the Championship. But confidence is everything when you're building. When you're the likes of, I suppose, the Dublin, who have the reputation, the Meath of the last few years, it is just about getting that click back and get that drive back going. Confidence is very much part of the game when you're trying to build, and I think Armagh will have that absolutely in spades over the next few months, and it will be invaluable to them. And there's no point in saying they are going to be a threat, absolutely, and I would love to see them advance past the quarter-final stage, because I suppose that's what the stage that they've got stuck on in previous years. I do think they could, and I do think they will, but I think they're maybe a different animal under Greg McGonagall as well. But as I said, there is no ruling out Dublin for me, and also Kerry later on in this championship this year.
So what's different about Armagh from what's Greg done, basically?
Well, Greg has absolutely massive experience in ladies football. He said himself the amount of Division 1 titles and big games he's lost with the management of Dublin and Monaghan over the years have been, they've hurt to know him, but he's gained a lot of experience from that. He knows teams, he knows ladies football. It's his first year as well in with this Armagh group. And like the impact of a new voice straight from the get-go can often be very positive. And there does seem to be an energy about them. There does seem to be a kind of unity about them. They're happy, and they seem happy in the camp. They seem happy with what they're doing. So I think they trust in him, and I think he trusts in them, and he's playing them. Yes, well, they don't have a huge depth, and they haven't been playing their games with a huge depth in the sense of bringing in a huge amount of substitutes, but they're confident in how they're playing. They're confident in their score getters. They're confident in working hard in their defence. And like they were, I have to say, at one stage there, you have the likes of Carolyn O'Hanlon, who's in her 23rd season with Armagh. I mean, her 23rd.
It's unbelievable.
And even Breen Tyre said to me beside me at halftime, we were taking a break, he said, she's playing like a quarterback. She's sitting in the pocket. She's watching it all. You know, I think he's putting players in ways that the men play to their strengths, isolating Amy Macken up front. No defender wants to be up there on their own with Amy Macken and leaving a long ball into her. Like I said, Carolyn O'Hanlon back in the pocket, getting on the ball, pulling the strings, directing the play. Lauren McConville able then to, she was at stalwart at centre back, and she was able to also drive forward knowing that that cover was there, and she instigated so many attacks. She broke through defences. So I think it's just, he has the experience, he's instilling a belief within them and a confidence within them, and they're very much playing to their strengths at this point of the time of the year.
Ali Cahill, Cavan footballer and Lidl ambassador, joins us as well. Ali, when you're looking at that Armagh team, does it give everybody around them confidence? Is in every other county that Meath have been able to do it, Kerry have been able to do it, that it is possible to be able to get to that top table in a short enough space of time?
Hi, yeah, thank you for having me on. And yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think they're an excellent team. You know, they're fast-paced, they transition quick, you know, seeing them in the final. And they're definitely paving the way for other teams coming up, and they're showing that you can come up and, you know, win finals. And, you know, I'm sure they'll be pushing on for the next 2 years. They're a brilliant team. And, yeah, I definitely agree with all you are saying there.
And just in terms of takeaways from the league, Ali, are you seeing the development of the game? Are you seeing the improvements? I know there's loads more investment and focus. What's it like being in it?
I think this year, you know, it was definitely evident to see across all the divisions, the standard was there. And, like, each team was competing. There was no team that really stood out. And you could see that in the finals. You know, two close finals there in Crow Park. And, yeah, it's definitely pushing on and playing in the league. You know, unfortunately, we didn't do as well as we wanted to, but we still got some positives out of it. And it was definitely a brilliant league to play in this year. Especially it was more competitive with two teams going down, which definitely will bring on the standard.
Ali, it must be almost hard to believe, and you as well. I'll go to you on this, Michelle, because you've a few years on, Ali, yep, but to see the likes of Cork and Galway being relegated, it's pretty amazing.
It is, to be honest. I mean, Cork won Division 1 League in 2019, and they've 12 Division 1 League titles in total, and Galway have appeared in 3 Division 1 finals since 2015. So, I mean, there, I suppose, if you're considering over the last 10 years who you would say are in the top 4-5 teams in that mix would have been Galway and Cork for a long, long time. And I don't think anybody would have forecast at the start of this ladies football campaign when they're predicting that two teams have to go down. I don't think anyone would have said Galway and Cork. I didn't hear anyone. Most people actually said my own county, Waterford, if I'm honest. But I mean, it was completely unpredictable. But look, I think maybe from a Cork perspective, they're in the middle of a cycle of change here. They've lost a lot of players, and you know, no team over the years has been able to withstand that amount of experience leaving the panel and still maintain that level of standard of football. And it does feel like they're going through a period of change there, and that will take time to adjust to. And you know what? Having been in a situation where I played on the team in a senior team and having to go down to intermediate, maybe in a year or a few years' time, they might see it as the best thing that could have happened. I know we did personally, because it allows you time to build and build at a level that's appropriate, and then gain success and then gain momentum and then bring yourself back to the top table, which is what the likes of Kerry and Armagh and Meath have done over the last 3 years.
Ali, it just shows how competitive it all is, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely shows that. You know, each team, there's more teams coming up and the standards are raising. It's just so competitive, which is just brilliant to see, I think. And you just never know who's going to go out and win. Like Michelle said, we weren't expecting that at all. So, yeah, it's brilliant to see.
Okay, guys, thank you as always for coming on and looking back on the league. It's been a really good one, but so much more to look forward to over the next few months. Ali, we'll be keeping an eye on you, that's for sure. And Michelle will be chatting to you as well. No doubt, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stand by because Greg Allen is going to chat to us about the Masters.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM.
Welcome back. It's time to look ahead to the Masters. And I'm delighted to say that Greg Allen joins us all the way from Augusta. How are you, Greg?
Good. What is it in here? It's about early afternoon, so I'll say good afternoon, good evening to you, whichever suits.
Alan Cawley is with me in studio, and he has told me, Alan, the former footballer, that the Masters at Augusta is his favourite sporting event.
Full stop. Ahead of Leeds promotion push from Division.
No. Oh, he's rowing back.
See, I knew I'd find something there. You know, and that's more important.
Well, apart from football, Greg, it is the Masters and the Crucible at the snooker, and obviously the two of them are happening in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But I'm like a kid in a sweet shop for the Masters. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic. I can't. I've been coming here a long time, and it just gets more fantastic. It seems. I actually think, and it's impossible to improve on perfection, but it does look more perfect than ever. And it is an absolutely wonderful presentation of the golf course over the next few days. Not that you'll be seeing it too clearly tomorrow, if the weather forecast is correct. about 2 inches of rain and storms and very, very strong possibility of a suspension of play. And we had one of those last year because it went into Sunday that I think there was 26 holes that had to be played on Sunday because of the amount of storm damage that was levelled on the course last year. And I think people might remember that two trees fell on the 17th and it was a miracle that nobody was hurt. So, yeah, you know, that type of weather in springtime around here is not unusual, and we're due some heavy rain tomorrow, which is interesting in one respect, because anybody who knows about golf and, you know, the way Augusta plays, it's famous for having the most interesting type of tournament ahead if the ground is firm and the ball is bouncing and the slick greens and the slopes off the greens, which are very sharp. In hard, fast grounds, control of the golf ball is very, very difficult. But that rain tomorrow will definitely take some of that out of the ground. There's no question as to how much they pull in terms of moisture out of the ground come Sunday. And the final round is another question, because there is good weather forecast from Friday onwards.
Is there anyone that the rain suits, Greg? Any golfers?
Oh, Rory loves rain. Well, it doesn't look like playing in it, but he loves the result of the rain. But over the years, he's proved that he's got a bit more to his game than simply winning on soft golf courses. But actually, all four of his majors were on very green, lush golf courses, the ones that he won. But as we know, that's the big elephant in the room here. He hasn't won a major in nearly 10 years. He hasn't ever won the Masters. And that's one of the big storylines. And it's not just an Irish storyline. I'm very interested to listen to my colleagues from, you know, certainly from America, because he's loved over here, really, and in a big way. And to the point where I think in the final round, himself and Patrick Reed in 2018, there were more people cheering for Rory, a lot more people cheering for Rory than there were for Patrick Reed, to be brutally honest, because Reed isn't a very popular player. But at the same time, you know, an Irishman having that many voices behind him, he's very popular. So many want him to win, to complete the career Grand Slam, and he himself obviously wants it so much. It kind of overwhelmed him last year. He missed the cut. He came in with so much optimism last year, having finished second the previous year, shooting 64 in the final round. Came in last year, dialed up the rhetoric, got very confident, and then really had a bad first two rounds and missed the cut. So he's been in a scenario this week of dialing everything down. No TV interviews, no radio interviews, 10 minutes of a press conference, 10 minutes and 23 seconds to be exact, the shortest press conference by anyone by a long way, all designed to really dial things down and hopefully take some of the pressure off himself going into this week.
So who are the big contenders then, Greg?
Well, this is one of the things now. The amalgamation of the LIV Series players and the PGA Tour players at the Masters, it's the first time this year that we're seeing the best players in the world all play together. And if you take the top three players from the LIV Series, say, for example, Cameron Smith, Brooks Koepka and John Rahm, like, they front up against the top three players in the world, which are Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, and... in third, I've forgotten who's the third in the world. But you know, they run up against them very, very, very closely. So effectively, now we're seeing the top players in the world together, and this adds a level of real interest, I think, to this week, even more than we would normally find, because this framework agreement between the LIV, the PIF, the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, which backs the LIV Series, and the PGA Tour, it has not come to any fruition, nor does it look like coming to fruition since last June the 6th. So it looks as though the majors this year are going to be the only tournaments where we will see all the best players in the world play together, unless there is a big announcement shortly. But there's no sign of that announcement being imminent between the Public Investment Fund and the PGA Tour. So I think it adds a layer of intrigue. So take that as read, and you have, you know, the appearance of John Rahm here, Brooks Koepka. They were first and second last year. Rahm defeated Koepka and indeed Phil Mickelson, another LIV Series player. And of course, last year Rahm was a PGA Tour player, but since December he's been a LIV Series player. So if you look at last year's top three, they're all LIV Series players. So that's a layer of intrigue. And then you have the Rory McIlroy story. Scottie Scheffler, though, is the far and away the biggest favourite here by a long, long way, because of the fact that he is just so much better than anybody else among the players who are on the PGA Tour this season and pretty much for last season. He won the Players' Championship with a final round of 64. He won the Arnold Palmer Invitational. On both occasions, Wyndham Clark was in second place, and he's a serious challenger. But Wyndham Clark, the US Open champion from last June, he beat Rory McIlroy, of course, in that kind of head-to-head in Los Angeles. Wyndham Clark is a complete revelation. This time last year, he was outside the top 100 in the world, and now Wyndham Clark, an imperiously good ball striker, by the way, which is one of the big categories where you have to be good around here. Wyndham Clark has to be a contender, but he's never played the Masters before. And if he was to win, he'd be the first player in 45 years since Fuzzy Zeller in 1979 to win on his Masters debut. So loads of really interesting storylines running through this Masters.
Okay, Greg, loads to look forward to, and no doubt you'll be checking in with us over the next few days.
And one thing I will say is I'm shouting, of course, for Shane Lowry because of the fact that Shane has had a really good last two Masters. In fact, since Shane Lowry played with Tiger Woods in 2020, played three rounds with Tiger Woods in 2020, Lowry said that he's learned so much from playing with Woods in those three rounds that it transformed the way he went about Augusta. It took a lot of the fear of the golf course away from him when he saw Woods really plotting his way around. And of course, back then, that was the year after Woods had won the Masters in 2019, so Woods was still a serious player. So Lowry saw what Woods had done, and since then Lowry has not been outside the top 25 in the last four Masters, and was third in 2022, tied for third in 2022, when he had a chance of winning, in fact, only taking a triple bogey on the fourth hole, but still finished third in the final round in 2022. And last year, Lowry was inside the top five on Sunday, eventually finishing tied for 16th. So Lowry does have a real chance here, and he knows himself, I think, as well, that he's a serious contender, albeit behind the top contenders who I've just been talking about.
Okay, Greg, thank you so much. Hope you don't get too wet tomorrow. We'll be talking to you during the week. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us. Back soon. RTE 2FM. Now we're turning our attention to Gaelic Games. Damien Lawler joins us on the line. Damien, it's that time of year where the underage teams really come into focus, and a big night tonight in the Munster Under 20 Championship.
Huge night, Marie, and I think we've been playing the round robin series there for the last few weeks, and I think the winners come true now, and the runners up come true. And basically a game that takes place, one of the games that takes place tonight is Kerry versus Clare, and Tomás O'Shea is the Kerry manager, and it's his second season in charge. And I suppose Tomás is box office. I always nearly, you know, look out for the teams he's involved in, because he's so forthright in his opinion. It's his second season, but Kerry haven't won at this level in under 20 or 21 since 2008. And, you know, there's always pressure to win in Kerry, but Tomás would feel too that a lot of his job is about getting young players through. And he's also adamant that the game is changing and evolving as well, Marine. Not just at senior level, but it's coming down to it underage, where teams are generally having more of a cut these days.
Look, I think the game will always evolve, Damien. It might take a little bit of while. And you see, I think it has evolved. I think the top teams, look at the top teams and look at what they're trying to do. There was so much emphasis on defensive football, defensive football, defensive football. And people were forgetting about the other side of the field, and they were getting numbers back, but they didn't really know how to attack after it. And I think now you look from all the learnings that are there, even the Donegals are trying to counteract at pace. Now, they did it back in the day, in fairness to them, but all a lot of other teams, they struggled with their attacking play. It was just slow, slow, slow every side, and I think people got frustrated with that. And I think as it evolves, I genuinely believe there'll be more emphasis on attacking football.
Really interesting thoughts there from Tomás O'Shea, and hopefully we'll see those two teams having a cut tonight. Damien, it's also the time of year as well where handball comes into focus.
Yeah, big time, Marie. We saw where Gunnar Brady, Paul Brady, came out of nowhere again, really, to get to the All-Ireland Men's Senior Final last weekend. And he'd taken maybe one of the years, I suppose he'd taken last year off inactive, came back to the Masters doubles, came back to the All-Ireland Men's Seniors again. And, you know, one of the stars of the game. But he's not the only big name in action, too, Marie. There's many, many All-Ireland finals on in Croke Park this weekend. One that certainly caught my eye is the junior final between Jack Doyle and Kilkenny and Jerome Cahill from Tipperary. Jerome Cahill, people might recall, sensational hurler, won an All-Ireland Minor, an All-Ireland 20, an All-Ireland 21, and also was voted at Borgash Energy Under 20 Hurler of the Year a few years ago too. So he hasn't played for the county in a number of seasons. Liam Cahill would have tried hard to get him back, but Jerome's been focused on work, and certainly focused on his club. He captained his club, Killarwan, to win a county title a few years ago at the age of 23. Still in 25, but playing in the All-Ireland Junior Singles Final this Sunday, Marie, and already has won the All-Ireland Doubles title at that grade, beating Jack Holden among the Kilkenny team. Jack was a member of the Thomastown team that won an All-Ireland Intermediate Hurling title just recently as well. So the reason I bring it up, it just shows you too that how the sports can complement each other. And, you know, you're getting big, huge crowds for handball lately. The streaming numbers are really off the charts over exceeding nearly where they're expecting. A new president at the helm in Conor McDonald from Donegal, and it's in a good place. And while we'll have two Camogie League finals and Dublin versus Meath in Croke Park on Sunday, you'll have handball in all this weekend as well. So it's certainly lots to look out for if anybody's interested in checking that out as well.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll definitely be keeping an eye on it, as we will be out that Camogie that's coming up over the weekend and off the football championship as well. We'll be previewing that here on this programme later in the week. Thank you so much as always, Damien.
Thanks, Marie.
And that is all we have time for, but we must announce our competition winner thanks to Aer Lingus, the official airline partner of the Irish rugby team. Of course, the answer is false. Germany do not compete in the Six Nations. And congratulations to Kate McGeoghegan O'Grady, who has won the signed Irish jersey and is in Friday's draw for a trip to London to see Ireland take on England. More chances to win with Aer Lingus on the show this week, so keep it here. So that's it from us this evening. I'll be back tomorrow.